The date is December 7th, 1969, and we're watching Frosty the Snowman. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Merry Christmas!
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the corncob pipe to my button nose.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
So this week we are doing something a little bit different than our normal movie. We wanted to watch some holiday classics, so we've got a three-part episode here where we have three different guests joining us tonight, and we're going to look at Frosty the Snowman, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And we have a different guest for each one of these movies. For Frosty the Snowman, we have brought back our friend that we last saw in our Pitch Black episode, Mr. Will Brisbane.
Hello, you guys.
Hey, Will, glad to have you back.
Good to see you.
Will is our two eyes made out of coal, I guess.
Yeah, there you go.
That works for me.
Yeah.
Or our magic hat.
He's the magic hat.
I don't think I'm magic hat level, but, you know, two eyes made out of coal sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so this part of the episode, we are looking back at December 1969 when Frosty the Snowman aired on CBS. So let's kick this off by getting Colin to do a 60-second synopsis.
I was so tempted to just, like, sing the song. But, yeah, I don't know. That seems like...
That's a cop-out.
Mailing it in, yeah. but also might be, like, suing potential? I don't know. I don't know how these things work.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably public domain, but
I mean, this episode would have you singing three songs then. Because really, you can sing a synopsis for every single one of them.
Yeah. Alright. After he's brought to life by a magic hat, Frosty the Snowman befriends a group of local children and embarks on a day of fun, while the magician whose hat gave him life seeks to have it returned to him. When warm temperatures start to threaten his existence, Frosty and Karen, one of the kids, hop on a train to the North Pole where he can live forever. Upon arriving, Frosty is cool, but Karen almost freezes to death. Being the hero he is, Frosty sacrifices himself to bring Karen to a warm shelter. Fortunately, Santa Claus arrives just in time to resurrect Frosty, and they all live happily ever after. That is your 60-second synopsis.
Nice.
Of a 25-minute... episode or special.
Yeah. We picked these three movies because we all just grew up with these movies, or at least I know I did. Will, I mean, you're significantly younger, but I have to assume the same thing, that this is something that was tuned to your TV every year.
This was like, out of the three... This is the one that I've watched the most. Like, I watched Rudolph a fair amount, and I don't think I ever really watched Santa Claus is Coming to Town, but, like, I always had Frosty. Like, I have it on, like, DVD and stuff.
Yeah. What about the sequels?
I know there's a Frosty Returns.
Yeah. See, I say sequels. I pluralize that. I don't know whether I meant to, but I know for sure there's Frosty Returns.
That's the only one I've heard of, but I haven't seen it.
Okay. Colin, what about you? Frosty the Snowman, growing up.
Yeah, unfortunately, I had never watched any of these until last year.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, the my Christmas classics are, like, Charlie Brown.
Okay, good
and,
one.
And Garfield Christmas.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, those types of, I guess, probably, like, 80s, 90s cartoons.
Yeah, okay.
I'd never... Oh, the Grinch would be one too.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I'd never watched the Rudolph or Frosty or Santa Claus Coming to Town until I was like last year I was in Shoppers Drug Mart and I saw there was a Blu-ray collection for like $10.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, That'd be a fun add to my Christmas movie collection, and so I bought them and watched them all for the first time.
Yeah, okay.
That's crazy. You've just, like, never seen it.
Yeah. No. I feel like
everybody has seen those.
Yeah, it's really funny because I was watching Elf, and then I watched the Movies That Made Us documentary on Netflix about Elf, and they kept talking about, you know, Rankin and Bass and Rankin and all this stuff, and I was just like, no context.
Yeah. But now it makes sense.
Yeah, now I totally see it, yeah.
Yeah. So let's just jump right into it, because I don't have any of my usual box office stats or anything. So it's directed by Jules Bass and Arthur Rankin Jr., double director on this, produced by the same two people, and written by Romeo Muller. So we open this movie with Jimmy Durante talking about how it all started with snow. I like that we've got Jimmy Durante, a call back to our My Stepmother is an Alien episode.
Don't remember the guy.
Well, that's what it's the ha-cha-cha-cha guy, right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
Jimmy Durante saves the world in that movie.
What a hero. And here he is.
Yeah.
Regaling us with the snowman story.
Yeah.
So now, one thing that's never brought up in the song is the fact that it takes Christmas snow. The first snow, and it has to be at Christmas. That's the magic cocktail that gets you a talking snowman. I like how, you know, they made sure they put that loophole in there so that kids around the world weren't like, why isn't my snowman coming to life?
But why does he need the hat then?
Well,
the hat was the key.
That's the extra bit of magic.
Okay.
But I think if it was a snowman on a Christmas magic, yeah. I think if it was just a regular snowman on a boring old, like, early December snow, there it wouldn't have happened. It's this magical concoction of Christmas snow, the first snow on Christmas.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So the magician storyline I've always found a little odd. Like, just why is he green when everyone else is, like, normal colored? Or is he green or, like, yellow? He's, like, off color.
He's, like, I thought he was, like, olive. Like, he was, like...
Okay.
Wait, let me see. I'm just...
He's, like...
He's Greek?
He's Greek. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So he is, like... Everybody else is, like, pink skin, and he's, like, more olive, like, orange skin.
Yeah.
They needed to accentuate the fact that he was the villain.
Yeah.
Seems problematic.
Yeah. I do want to know about the magic toboggan. When they all leave the school, there's this one kid that he's going up and down hills just as fast as the kids that are running.
I saw that.
So now, what came first? The song or the movie?
I actually don't know.
I'm guessing this song, but I don't know now that you mention it.
Did Rankin and Bass write the song?
Yeah.
I mean, I assume it was written for the movie.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, on the other hand, we brought up The Grinch earlier. I mean, that was a book first.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the first television special featuring Frosty the Snowman.
Yeah. Oh, it was released in 1950.
1950, yeah.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, okay. So then, you know, good attention to detail to make sure that they didn't just go with the carrot-nosed. You had to make sure that it was a button nose, so they got that right. Good on them.
Yeah, I wonder at what, like, I mean, I don't want to go into the history of snowmen, I guess, but my daughter has been obsessed with snowmen since last Christmas.
Okay.
And I bought her, like, a Frosty the Snowman book, but I was, like, she was used to always seeing carrot-nosed snowmen, and now here I'm trying to show her a button-nosed version. And it was something that I never really thought about. Like, really, you know it's Frosty if it has a button nose, I guess.
Yeah.
Because you don't really see many non-carrot-nosed snowmen in the world anymore.
Well, no, except Olaf. So it's like, well, you know, at first I could think that maybe, like, the button nose was part of the magic ingredients. You have to have only these things. A corncob pipe, two pieces of coal, and a button. Right? Like, those, you know, that with the hat and the first snowfall thing, if you have a carrot nose. But now Olaf is walking around like he owns the fucking place, and and all it's the humor comes from his carrot.
What is the point of the coal eyes when as soon as he comes to life, he just has normal human eyes?
Normal human eyes? Yeah, I don't know. There's some sort of alchemy going on there I don't understand. So I have to say that if you're animating children in the winter outside making a snowman, you should put some pants on them. There were a lot of exposed skin legs happening in this movie as well.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, you're right. They worked somewhere in shorts.
Yeah.
I thought you meant when you first said that, I was like, did they really just forget to put anything on the kids?
No, they were wearing shorts. They were all wearing shorts. It's like Bart Simpson. I mean, you know, that's the kind of outfit. Yeah. So the hero of this movie is Hocus Pocus, I have to say. The rabbit?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The rabbit is one of the greatest characters in all of Christmas movies. Maybe that's a stretch, but
he did kind of sell out on the magician.
Yeah. So Frosty knows an awful lot of things for being just born. Like, he doesn't know how to count to 10, but how does he even know how to count to 5? Like, he's like, oh, I can only count to 5. Why do you understand the concept of any numbers?
Yeah. Good point.
Shouldn't he come out of it all like Frankenstein like? I mean, he comes in with happy birthday. That's his catchphrase. But, you know, it's like, shouldn't he come out of it like, oh, yeah. You know?
I mean, yeah.
Maybe in a twisted horror version of Frosty the Snowman. That
why did you create me?
Father!
It is impressive that he knows that even though he's just born, he seems to know the layout of the town enough to lead the children on a little march.
Yeah, I've always wanted to see the center of town for all like 3.5 minutes of his life. Yeah,
but maybe it's like the Christmas. He's gleaned the knowledge from falling as Christmas snow over. So he like as the snow fell, that he would have intuited the city and everything.
Learned it by osmosis in some way.
Yeah, I'm stretching here, but
yeah, yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of.
It's funny looking back at something like this that's from 1969, just to see how they viewed the world. First of all, I mean, the Irish cop that stops them, where he wants to give them a ticket, but it's an Irish cop. In this thing from 1969, you know?
Naturally,
yeah. But I like the you know the fact that he wants to give him a ticket, and he's like, "Oh yes, please, to the North Pole," and she says, "Sorry, sir, he doesn't know such things. He only came to life today," and he's like, "Oh, carry on then." Yeah. can I use that as an excuse if I'm pulled over? Oh, sorry, officer. I only came to life today.
Yeah.
Move on through.
The fact that nobody is saying, like, oh my god, there's a talking snowman herding all our children, into the woods. Maybe we should be concerned. Like, don't you think at the point where Frosty and Karen jump on the train, like, the next day there's for sure missing child posters and, like, wanted posters of live snowman wanted for kidnapping child.
Yeah. Like, you know, the sketch artist would be like, are you kidding me? This is the description. It looks like a snowman. No, it was a snowman. I swear. Taken off to an insane asylum. Yeah, okay. Talking snowman. So, yeah, they get on the train. They're headed to the North Pole. And, you know, he says, are you coming too? And she says, I'm sure my mother won't mind as long as I'm home by dinner. So, you know, like, it's like, you're right. She's just whatever, I'll just follow you, stranger.
That's also, what is the professor, the magician's name? Like Hinkmore or something?
Hinkle is the professor, and the magician's name is, oh, what is it?
I don't think I wrote it down in any of my notes.
I wasn't able to find it when I was on IMDb.
Well, I think the magician, his name is Professor something.
Oh, the magician is Professor Hinkle. Right.
Yeah. So when they get on the train, his big plan is to just stow away by attaching himself to the bottom exterior of a train going through what I can only assume is like Arctic tundra.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's on the Polar Express.
Karen should not be the only one that's freezing to death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, one thing about the train trip. There's one point where the train stops and like backs up to let a passenger train go by. Is this something that would actually happen on a real train?
Definitely not.
No, I think they have people who are in charge of, you know, controlling the rails to make sure
Yeah.
Like, everything runs on time.
Yeah. But conveniently, that's a perfect moment for them to jump off the train because Karen is freezing to death.
Yeah, well, yeah.
To jump off a cold train into the freezing wilderness.
Yeah. And
But thank God they have Hocus Pocus to go talk to the animals and see if we can get a little bonfire happening.
That's right. That's right. It seems a little bit terrifying that animals in this world know how to create fire.
Yeah.
It's a revolution.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to look out for that. I mean, you know, it would have also helped if Karen had put on some pants instead of wearing shorts.
Yeah, but I mean, if she had put on some pants, then we would have never been warned about the potential animal revolution.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have had the education about the dangers of hypothermia.
Yeah. So while they're waiting for Santa to show up, Frosty, or the magician, comes back. So Frosty, because he's made of snow, is the fastest belly whopper in the world. So he slides away. But don't you think that this would make Frosty the size of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man? Like, shouldn't he be gathering snow as he's going down?
Yeah.
Either that or shaving snow off himself. Like, he should come out of this with a six pack or like 100 times the size.
Well, yeah, because every time a snowball in movies rolls down a hill, it gets to like unbelievable size.
Yeah.
It's like a staple of snow movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see your point. Maybe he has some sort of, like, I was trying to think, does he have the ability to, he was already melting a little bit before, you see, so like,
does part he have of an me thinks, icy shell?
Yeah, part of me thinks once they got to a cold place, he would have iced over a little bit, and maybe that slickness would have allowed him to slide.
Okay.
Down the hill.
Fair.
I can get that. So, luckily, in the middle of nowhere, they find a greenhouse. Frosty takes her inside. He's like, I'll only stay in for a minute. And the magician closes the door and straight up murders Frosty, traumatizing this young girl as she watches her new friend melt away literally before her eyes.
That was vicious. Yeah. And, like, you know it's coming too, but it's just so... That yeah. scene used to scare the crap out of me as a kid. I used to cry, I remember.
Yeah. Well, I like how they play like a little in memoriam for him, though, by recapping scenes from the show to...
scenes that you literally just watched 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Hey, remember that?
Remember that? It was so long
day
ago.
Of his life.
Yeah. But, you know... Santa comforts her and lets her know that Frosty will be back because it was Christmas snow, and he opens the door, and that's enough to make Frosty come back to life, but not kill the plants. And Santa threatens the magician that he'll never get a Christmas present ever again. I don't know about you, but Santa stopped bringing me presents when I was over 18.
I mean, Santa still brings me presents to this day. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Oh, okay.
I'll have to see. I turn next Christmas when I'm 18. I'll come back and let you know if he dipped me or not.
I guess maybe I'm just on the naughty list.
Yeah.
So he makes the magician go home and write lines. Like, you're naughty. You're a naughty, naughty magician. I'll send you home to write lines. But Frosty comes back to life. Happy birthday. And Santa takes Karen home. No complaints about how cold she is flying in a sled way above the earth. And I don't think she was home in time for supper. Like, where's the mom that's freaking out? You know, like, where are the cops waiting outside looking for this missing child?
Yeah.
And the end. I just tore apart a beloved Christmas classic. That is Frosty the Snowman.
Well, you kind of just imagine the end of this movie, like the end of Home Alone, where, but like Frosty's in the car looking out the window like the Wet Bandits.
Yeah.
And then he melts and he is the Wet Bandit. Get it, guys?
Oh, boy. So Colin Will on IMDb, it scored 7.3 out of 10. It has no Metascore. It has, on the tomato meter, it has 73% and an audience rating of 72%. A lot of love for this program. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like, I don't know. Like a tobogganing child on a snowman? No, that doesn't work. Like a rabbit jumping on your head inside a hat? Hit us with some reviews. That one's weak.
Okay. You know what? There's a lot of love for this movie, so just to I don't know what the word is, even things out maybe or provide a alternative view, I'm going to give some negative reviews here that I found on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh boy, okay. Merry Christmas, folks.
Yeah. Ho, ho, ho. Robert H. says, possibly 2 out of 5 stars, possibly the worst of the Rankin and Bass films. Frosty plays to a clearly juvenile crowd. The music, dialogue, and even the animation are less than stellar. If it weren't for the nostalgia factor, Frosty the Snowman wouldn't be on people's fave Christmas movies list. Had the film been released today, it would have been easily forgotten. It has a Rocky and Bullwinkle feel to it, and being only 30 minutes long, could have easily fit into the show's time slot. Frosty the Snowman isn't all bad, though. Continuing the tradition of telling stories based around the lyrics of songs, does have a few memorable moments, like when Frosty comes alive. It is quite unexpected to see her happy birthday in a Christmas movie not based around Jesus. And every time I hear those words in the film, I tend to smile.
Nice. Nice. He brought Jesus into it.
This one I would have liked a little bit more explanation. Jason G gives the movie 3 out of 5 stars and says, while generally regarded as a good-natured classic by adults, for children it is the most tragic story ever told about 20 minutes in.
Okay.
Well, the 20 minutes in is about the time that the magician murders Frosty.
Yeah.
Dylan P. says 3 out of 5 stars and says, a mediocre Christmas film, you're much better off watching Rudolph or Santa Claus is Coming to Town if you want a Rankin-Bass movie. It's just too silly and worthless.
And worthless.
And then the last one is from Danny, 1 out of 5 stars. To hell if I'm going to join this bandwagon of nut jobs who can't tell a good Christmas special from the crap you find on your shoe after just walking through a petting zoo, which may or may not be shit.
Merry Christmas.
I mean, yeah, as I go deeper and deeper into the depths of the audience reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, you are starting to see that this is clearly not the favorite of the three.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, there we go. So, yeah, 7.3 and 72 from audiences, 73% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, yeah, mid-70s. Yeah. I don't know if we can actually rate this. I kind of agree with that first review where it's like, it's all nostalgia.
Yeah.
I would have been interested to show this to my kids and see how they react. I don't know whether they have seen this. And it's just like, it is a very simple movie.
Very, very simple.
But it's 100% nostalgia.
I think what it lacks, like when I think of the Rankin and Bass films, the draw to me is the stop, like the claymation.
Yeah.
And I think not having that makes this one, it's a, like a lackluster cartoon.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But, you know, it still tickles me in the right place. I still love Happy Birthday.
Yeah.
It's just fun. It gets you right in the right mood for Christmas. It's like just the feeling of watching that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there we go. Yeah. Frosty the Snowman. Yeah, it's a good one. But we'll have to see if it's the best of the three. Let's see what we think at the end when we get here. But for this first part, that is Frosty the Snowman. Thank you so much to Will Brisbane for joining us for this portion of this special Christmas episode. Will, before you take off on us, is there anything you want to plug or where people can find you online, that kind of stuff? Plug your shit!
Sure. People can find me on Instagram at will.brisbane. Will spelled the usual way. Brisbane is B-R-I-S-B-I-N. And on Instagram and Facebook at just at Will Brisbane. No period in there.
Right on. Right on. Thank you, Will.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, Will.
Merry Christmas,
Merry
Will.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas to the both of you.
Yeah. Now, Colin, in our waiting room, we have our next guest, Mr. Joel Sims. Before we get to him and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, why don't you just give us our introduction so that we know how to kick this show off?
The date is December 6th, 1964, and we're watching Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
But joining us now, last seen in our Risky Business episode, we have back for part two of this episode, Mr. Joel Sims. Joel, welcome back.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me. Gentlemen, long time no see.
You betcha. So we are here to discuss, now, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Earlier in the episode, we were discussing Frosty the Snowman. This is mostly for the benefit of Joel. I'm hoping that anyone listening to this knows that, you know, we just did Frosty because they listened to that part. But Joel, yes, we just did Frosty, which came out in 1969. Interestingly, Rudolph came out on NBC, but Frosty was on CBS. So I don't know whether this Rankin and Bass group decided to jump ship in 1969. NBC treating them poorly.
It's like a Battle of the Networks thing. It's like a Conan and Leno type situation, you know?
That's right. But Colin, before we get into Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, I think we need from you a 60-second synopsis.
Okay. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. All right. Rudolph? I don't know what to say. Does the L need to be heard?
Well, does Rudolph make it sound too much like Adolf?
we're on dangerous territory.
Merry Christmas!
Rudolph the Red... damn it, that's not even how it starts. Rudolph, a reindeer afflicted with a glowing red nose, decides to run away from home after being ridiculed by all the normal-nosed reindeer. He is joined by Hermie, a workshop elf ridiculed by his peers for wanting to be a dentist. Bonded as misfits, they set off into the Arctic tundra, where they make a friend of a prospector named Yukon Cornelius. After a run-in with the abominable snow monster, the trio arrives on the Island of Misfit Toys, where the angelic Lion King asks them to get Santa to find houses for all his unwanted subjects. Rudolph leaves early because his nose light can't be contained, and when he gets home, he finds his parents have gone looking for him and has to rescue them by defeating the abominable snow monster with the help of Hermie and Yukon, who seems to perish in the battle but later shows back up having tamed the beast. There's also inexplicably some weird time lapse, like in literally just a frame that occurs. But anyways, Next, the big snowstorm shows up and Rudolph's big red nose saves the day, allowing Santa to do his Santa thing. And that's your 60-second synopsis.
Right on. So, yeah, in the first part of this episode, Joel, I'll bring you up to speed. We discovered that Colin only discovered these movies for the first time last year. He picked up a box set of these movies, and that was his first viewing. So,
are you serious?
Yeah, but now that...
Really?
Yeah, but now that Will has moved on and we've got you in here, I wanted you back specifically for this part of the show because... Way back when we did our first Christmas episode with you, you talked about how you used to look like Hermie the Elf. And so I figured Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was something close to your heart. Am I correct in assuming that?
You are correct in that assumption and that this movie is very near and dear to my heart in some ways, in a traumatic sense, in some ways, just because I adore the film. When I was younger, I had blonde, long, swoopy hair, and I also wanted to be a dentist, to which a girl once called me, oh, you're like Hermie, which is like really cool and what you want to hear when you are in the eighth grade and are at a very impressionable age, and you want people to think that you're cool and fun, and you're like, yeah, I'm the elf that wants to be a dentist from a stop-motion Rudolph movie, and it stuck until I went to high school.
Awesome.
So I still get flashbacks to that whenever I watch this movie. But this movie, I would maintain, is probably my favorite Christmas movie. When I think of Christmas, I think of this movie. I think of getting around with the family and all the many years that I've watched this around the Christmas season. I think of spending time at my grandmother's house or, you know, growing up on with my siblings or with my cousins, or even the past few years getting around for a drink and watching it in passing, having it on in the background.
Do you have any kind of drinking game that you play with it?
Every time that I have a flashback to junior high trauma, I drink to forget.
Okay.
I wish. That's a good idea. I should get one. Every time his nose glows, take a drink.
Well, every time his disguised nose falls off, take a drink.
Oh my gosh. Are you trying to encourage alcoholism here?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I absolutely, I really, really do enjoy this film.
Right on. Okay, well, let's jump into Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, directed by Larry Romer, produced by Jules Bass and Arthur Rankin Jr., and written by Romeo Muller, Robert May, and Johnny Marks. I didn't get to do this in the first part of the episode, but... We open this movie with newspaper headlines about storms around the country, and so now I get to go to Sponsorship Corner! So always on the lookout for product placements and movies this week, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is brought to you by the Chicago Sun-Times, Daily Mail, Daily News, New York Herald Tribune, and the San Francisco Chronicle. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. So yeah, we open this movie with Sam the Talking Snowman. And with Colin, with you just watching this last year for the first time, how does this character relate to Elf for you now? Like, do you definitely see the connection between what they did in Elf and did in this movie?
Yeah, for sure. Like, just with the aesthetic of Elf, it definitely comes from these movies for sure.
Yeah,
it's still weird because I can tell that these movies were such a... It's like these movies are like Christmas to some people.
Yeah,
and I feel like that's what Elf, you know, hitched their wagon to.
Yeah.
So it is always kind of weird thinking about like what I just took for granted watching Elf, I guess.
Well, one thing I've definitely noticed that differentiates this from Elf is everyone is so much nicer in Elf. Like, why is everyone an asshole in this one?
They're so mean.
The head elf, I mean, he's screaming like he's Spacely Sprockets, you know, like he Kermit, get back to work. You know, like, it's just, you know, but, like, even Santa is a bit of a dick, you know, where he's like, oh, it didn't sound good enough with the one choir, you know. But I also think that Mrs. Claus has a weird, like, Santa fetish. I mean, she's trying to fatten him up in the beginning, and she's like, no, no, you can't have a skinny Santa. But I think, meanwhile, it's kind of like, yeah, my lady bits are tingling because I've got this thing for Santa Clauses.
That'll make a good set. That'll make a good soundbite.
Well,
that'll be Sean's. That should be. You should cut that out and then use it as your like text message
ringer.
Your little notification.
My lady bits are tingling for Santa Clauses.
Everybody is like just mean and physically violent in this movie. Yeah. Everybody, they just are around just like assaulting each other, just battering one another around.
Yeah, like in Elf at least, they still try to lift Buddy up in Elf. Whereas this, it's like, no, you suck. We don't even know what a dentist is. It seems like a good idea to have a dentist at the North Pole. If what I learned in Elf about an elf diet is correct, they definitely need a dentist there.
I think that speaks to the 1960s. It was a different time. Some would say a better time where people relied on, you know, you had to be a little bit more resilient. And people didn't care about mental health. I'm not saying that's better.
This is a bad tangent I'm going down. Yeah.
No, keep going, like, Colin. Keep going.
Yeah. You know what?
I can see the pitchforks out my window. I'm just going to stop talking.
Okay,
now.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks. According to the I used to like this one podcast, mental health is not important and everyone's a pussy now.
Oh, we're so full of sound bites in this episode
shit.
Now. Yeah.
But it is, I will say, like, that is what you always kind of hear. Like, it was kind of the same way when we watched Frosty. You know, people are just a little bit more abusive towards children, and people are just meaner, and then you just have to kind of, like, take it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm even trying to interpret some of the undertones that are happening when it comes to Rudolph being born. With the red nose and how ashamed everyone is of this red nose. Like, what are they saying? Like, is this a commentary on racism? Is it a commentary on, or just individualism? Like, was there something about the 60s conformity that I didn't know? Like, Rudolph's a hippie for having a red nose? Is that what was going on?
Rudolph's actually a draft dodger.
Yeah.
Yeah. he's a pinko commie.
Pinko commie, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it just felt
maybe
like
he's red. It's red.
That's right.
Comrade
Rudolph. It all connects. Yeah. I don't know. I just, there was a point of me, like, where it just felt like at one point Donner should be yelling, "No son of mine is a queer." Like, you know, like that's just how it felt. Like, you know. It's the, you know, tisk, sir, tisk is all I can think is, you know, Donner, you should do better by your child.
Yeah.
But, you know, like even the fact that he can fly really well and Santa sees this and Santa is like, oh, well, it's too bad he's got that fucking red nose. Otherwise, you know, because now I can't use him. Like, it's not a handicap.
Like, this guy's a fucking freak. Like, this guy sucks,
yeah.
Dude.
And that's why I think Santa's an asshole, too.
Yeah. I mean, even in the, like, the original song, I guess, like, Rudolph is a story about, like,
bullying.
inclusivity, I guess, and that just because you're different doesn't, like, differences can have benefits or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about, like, finding that. But I think the way that they...
Yeah.
Obviously, they're trying to make this environment where they're like, clearly, Rudolph is otherized and treated like differently and poorly because of these things are different, so that they can drive the message home. But the way that they otherize Rudolph is like a little much.
Yeah. I was going to say, in the song, they just say, like, you know, they wouldn't let him play other reindeer in the reindeer games or whatever. It's like just a throwaway line. But in the movie, they're like, he's straight up bullying it. Like, it's weird. It's
a little bit different to, like, see it.
I don't remember.
Maybe that's just a fever dream memory recollection I have, but I remember they were like throwing rocks at him.
I don't know. I mean, there is so much more about this movie that is traumatizing to a young child. I mean, when the abominable snow monster comes, it's just absolute nightmare fuel. Donner and Rudolph are out having a happy-go-lucky, learning about things day, and then he learns immediately that you also have to hide from predators, and this thing comes tearing through. I remember that I was actually a little scared of this movie when I was really young.
I agree. I think that there's, I'm sure Colin can agree that he's also terrified of this movie on his first watch, like the rest of us were. I think that there's such a, in animation, especially at this time, they really liked hammering home dark messages really quickly, or having a scary scene.
Yeah.
You know, think about Bambi. Mm-hmm. What do you think? When people think of Bambi, they don't think of the charming story of Bambi and Thumper. They go, oh yeah, Bambi's mom got murked immediately.
Yep.
It's that same idea of just this immediate reality check these kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's some weird propaganda in really old school cartoons that's all about they intentionally subtly try to, sometimes not so subtly, but it's they try to teach kids behave or else the world is going to kill you. There's monsters everywhere. I feel like that was an old school tactic of kind of keeping children in line. What all grim fairy tales are.
True. But there was another message that I was wondering whether they were subliminally putting in here. Fireball is the one that takes Rudolph under his wing at first at the reindeer games. And he's got this nice, blonde hairdo and everything like that. You know, the factory itself feels a little Third Reich-y with everything going on. I'm wondering whether they're doing some kind of superior race commentary here, you know? I'm just saying, you know... Santa isn't that nice. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Santa created a police state, which is why everybody bullies Rudolph.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
The star that they put on the top of the tree at the end isn't the only star they're putting on things, you know?
So when Hermie gets fired and decides that he'll never fit in, he climbs out the fucking window? he can't just go out the door. Why are you going out the window? And they fire him and they still expect him to show up for choir practice. I'd be like, fuck you. I don't work here anymore. I don't got to be part of your fucking choir practice.
Part of your whole thing. Yeah.
Pleasing Hitler Santa.
Can you imagine if you got fired from a job and then they were like, but you're still going to be in tomorrow to mop the floors.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Unpaid, but you're going to be there, or we're going to, you know, there's a heavy implication of threat.
Yeah. Yeah. We also find out that in the 1960s that you could tell that a girl was interested in you if she casually insults you for talking funny, because that's what Clarice does.
I mean, that's what I was always led to believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what happened in Forrest Gump.
That's right.
Yeah.
Honesty. I mean, that's all it takes, right? You're at least building this relationship on honesty. You talk weird, but I kind of like you.
I remember when I was younger and I watched Clarice come up to Rudolph and go, "You're cute," and give him a little kiss on the cheek. I was like, damn. When will it be me, man? 9-year-old boy, what am I up next?
go get it, Rudolph. Go get it.
Keep fighting the good fight, man.
Yeah, because, you know, and then at this point, she still likes him when he's exposed for being the red-nosed freak that he is. But, Santa absolutely lays into Donner with, how dare you allow this abomination to play the reindeer games? Fuck.
But he's brutal.
Yeah. But it's a good thing Clarice likes him, because then we get to hear her sing this shitty, shitty song. This is the song that I dread every time I watch this movie. I don't like the Clarice song. It's like only certain songs can actually be heard properly. Or is it just me? Like, is the sound on my TV just messed up? But I feel like some of these songs sound like they're so distant. But some of them, it's, you know, like they're nice and clear. Like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was clear.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine the recording wasn't that great.
Well, like the Abominable Snowman, I find that he sounds like he's recording inside like a tin shack. Like his sound just sounds so like hollow and weird. Like it's just like they obviously just recorded wherever they could. One guy recorded in his garage, one guy recorded in a closet, like
and they were all recording at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like I'm literally just imagining them like sit like standing in a circle in a room with a single mic in the middle. So it's kind of like whoever's closest probably sounds the best. Some people are probably far away, but there's like no acoustic thought put in. It's just a open room.
Yeah, probably.
I think it's part of the charm of this movie is that some of it just sounds straight up bad. Yeah. I think that adds to the fact that, again, when I was younger, the Abominable Snowman was like, holy shit. And now that I'm older, the Abominable Snowman is even scarier. Actually, yeah, there's something about that tinny audio and the warmth to it. That I'm just blinded by nostalgic glasses on this one, to be honest.
Well, it's true. I mean, like, Yukon Cornelius is cool. Like, you know, that's for sure.
Forever. Yeah. Forever.
And like the misfit toys and everything like that, I mean, you know, absolutely the coolest. But I've always wondered about the misfit toys because it's like you've got the one that it's the Jack in the Box, but his name is what's his name again? I know I wrote it down. Oh, Charlie. So he has to be a Charlie in the Box. Why can't you just say, no, my name's Jack? Like pretend your name's fucking Jack. And then you're not an abnormal toy anymore.
Sean, do you think you're contributing to part of the problem? Do you think you're being the Santa Claus in this scenario?
I suppose so.
Why are you telling him to fit into his... He'd be like, no, change who you are. Get to the bottom line of the company. Charlie in the Box, you son of a bitch. You're Jack on the clock right now. You know?
Yeah. I'm part of the problem. That's true.
Yeah. Come on, Sean. Yeah.
So yeah, the Misfit Toys and Yukon Cornelius, I do love that. I always felt a special kinship to Yukon Cornelius with the fact that he's Canadian. Like he's just this crazy fucking Canadian. He's from the Yukon. So I always assumed he's Canadian. I don't care if he's from Alaska or some shit.
Yeah. Ooh.
Crazy Canadian to me.
I was blown up for, I don't know why. Again, maybe this is just my like 2020 brain, but I was like he has a gun on his belt. Like,
yeah, right?
This is a movie for children.
How dare you, not, sir?
This would not fly in Paw Patrol, dude. Imagine if the cop had a 22 on his hip, you know? The cop dog, that wouldn't work.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, I have one question about Hermie saying that he's a dentist. Did he just, like, proclaim that he's a dentist, and so now he's a dentist? Like, did he actually take any schooling? Because if there's a dental school there, you would think that the other elves knew what a dentist is. Is this like Michael Scott declaring bankruptcy? Is this, you know?
Yeah, I think he's just a subscriber to like Dentist Monthly.
Yeah.
he just has a stack hidden under his bed and he just dreams about being a dentist and he, you know, practices on, I don't know, I guess, teeth made of snow or ice.
Yeah, or he subscribes to whatever the 1964 equivalent of like HGTV is, you know, and he's watching like Extreme Makeovers and stuff like that. You watch enough house flipping shows, you know, you feel like you can renovate your own house. That's
like,
all
I can
I'm
do
saying.
Drywall.
Yeah, so you watch enough dental shows.
You're like, give me the drill. Yeah, give me the drill. I'm doing a root canal.
Hold my beer. I got this.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a dark version of Rudolph where they pan to the back of Hermie's closet and there's just like reindeer skulls that he's just been practicing his dentistry on.
Well, I think it's sick and twisted that that's how what he does to the monster. You know, I would have actually preferred it if the Abominable Snowman, or Abominable Monster, as they call him, I would have liked it if he had a bad tooth, and Hermie pulling the one bad tooth solved the problem.
Nice guy.
Yeah, instead yeah, of yeah. just fucking tearing out every tooth in the guy's head. Oh, well, you know, I guess you're eating applesauce and Jell-O for the rest yeah. of your life. Like,
yeah, have fun in the tundra. Enjoy when you the eat, liquid like, deer diet. And elk.
Yeah, exactly. Start sucking on some ice cubes.
I think if the movie was made now, it would be that way. But back in the day, they were like, we've already got one moral for this story. We don't need another one.
Yeah.
We just need some child violence.
Yeah. Yeah. Rudolph, after they've run away, he gets home, and now he's got antlers. They've aged him up. How much time has actually passed? When in the year is Rudolph born? Is he like a, you know, a January baby?
He's the baby Jesus. I think he was born on Christmas.
Oh, okay.
So it's been a year. It's from been Christmas a whole... to Christmas.
Okay. There we go. But yeah, he comes back, he's got antlers, and finds out that everyone's been abducted. Do you wonder, with the animation, which came first? Do you think it's the voices, or do you think it's the animation? Like, do you think, who's trying to match to whom?
I think that it was probably voices first.
Yeah.
Because I feel like with young actors and performers, trying to get them to sync up to a stop motion animation is like way, that's too much.
Well, and stop motion is so labor intensive. So
I oh, just... yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I know we're moved past at this point, but why was the ruler of the Island of Misfit Toys just like a winged lion and that was the king?
You know? Right? Like,
we're moving right past King yeah, Moon Racer, huh?
That's true, yeah. No, he also had really bad sound, too. He was also very tinny and echoey.
I did not understand the purpose of the Island of Misfit Toys at all. Like, that's something that prior to watching this movie, I'd really only heard of and didn't even know that it was connected to Rudolph.
Yeah.
But that whole part just seems like a fever dream. Like, I don't understand it.
It's kind of like the Pink Elephants on Parade equivalent to this movie, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the Willy Wonka going through the tunnel. They're like, yeah, look at these derelict members of society and how we look down upon them.
Well, it's just
so anyways.
It's just showing that Rudolph is a man of his word. You know, like, he promises that they'll come back for the toys, and they end up doing that. Even though we get the sad scene first where they're like, oh, well, I guess they abandoned us again.
I guess they'll never come.
I'm going to go out on a limb and just say they wanted it to be 50 minutes and not 30 minutes. So they were like, well, the song, we need to add something to this song.
Yeah.
Or something that's not in the song to beef this up a little bit.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that the Misfit Toys are like a, you know, I'm talking about mental health. I think that the biggest gift that they could have brought to the Island Misfit Toys isn't like sending them off to all these like, you know, households to be played with and discarded. I think just like some Prozac, you know?
Yeah.
They are depressed on the Island Misfit Toys. They need to help alleviate the mood.
I've watched the Toy Story like quadrilogy no less than 50 times over the last month because my daughter's really into it right now.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like maybe the message of the Island of Misfit Toys, similar to Toy Story 3 with Lotso and his depression at being abandoned that leads him down the path of evil, was maybe they were trying to teach the kids of the day to, like, you know, give those old toys a chance.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they're just going to end up here sad and depressed and, you know, needing pharmaceutical intervention, like Joel said.
Yeah, but the message I don't know if it needs to send is that, hey, when you meet someone, sleep with them in the same bed that night. That's a good idea. If you are a young reindeer and you meet a strange traveler, old man that's been out in the Arctic for too long, yeah, sleep with them in the same bed.
Back in the day, you could trust... They believed you could trust people. It's not like now where nobody trusts anybody. There's lurking out around every corner.
He would keep you safe because he's got a gun on his hip. So.
Exactly.
True. I think the message as well is being like to kids, being like, you know, those old toys you have that you don't use anymore, give them to somebody else. Like, get rid of, you know, you don't need those. You can recycle them. Times are rough.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
But also, again, Prozac.
Is Donner his surname? Because his wife is referred to as Mrs. Donner.
I hope that it's like Donald.
Donald Donner?
And he's like, hello, I'm Donald. Please, yeah. You can call me Donner. But yeah. Some people, he's like, it's Donald to you. Whenever he sees anybody that's not like a picture-perfect reindeer, he's like, it's Donald to you.
So when Rudolph comes home, he finds out that his parents are gone because they've been off looking for his sorry ass. And he's about to leave when suddenly the storm hits. The storm of storms. And we get a potentially racially insensitive igloo getting blown over with two Inuit inside. I couldn't quite tell whether that was checking some kind of racist boxes these days. But
I remember when that part would happen in the movies when I was younger, I'd always get really scared that it might have been my house. Because for any viewers who are listening who aren't aware, up in Canada, all that we live in is igloos during the winter. Our houses get buried under the snow, and we need to live under igloos and forage for materials throughout the rest of the harsh tundra month.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah, but then I would be reassured that it wasn't my igloo that was blown away. It was the neighbor's.
Yeah. But in the storm, Rudolph finds the abominable snow monster and his family and Clarice. And then the monster just straight up hits Rudolph over the head with a rock. Like nightmare fuel, I tell you. Hermie and Cornelius find everyone in the cave. And then, like, yeah, Hermie uses pig noises to lure the monster out. And then pulls all his teeth out. Like it's one of the Saw sequels. And then, like, Cornelius scares him off a cliff. Like, they're accomplices in a murder where they torture and murdered a creature. Like, that's the only reason he comes back at the end, right?
It's brutal.
They're like, that was too far, right? We have to show that he's actually reformed and not murdered.
Yeah, that we didn't just, like, gang up on him, torture him, and fucking beat him to death, send him off into the, you know?
Yeah. It's an interesting choice to bring the monster back.
Yeah.
I guess if they were just like, they wanted to be like, oh, don't worry about him. Like, he's not dead. He's still here. But I don't know.
Yeah.
No kid cared, I don't think.
Yeah. They're like, oh, cool. He's friendly now. If we just ignore the fact that he gave Rudolph a TBI a minute ago. Like,
yeah.
Oh, the abominable's back and he's great. He doesn't have any rocks in his hand. So there's no need to fear.
Yeah. But yeah, so the weather report is so bad all over that Santa thinks he's going to have to cancel Christmas. But, you know, sure, now you like the nose, huh? You fucking racist. So, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? Ah, he said it. And then Dad's like, I knew it all along. Blah, 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 blah. I knew you were going to be fine. It's like, no, you're a racist.
Fuck you, Dad.
Yeah. So, but we get Burl Ives singing Holly Jolly Christmas. I feel like Burl Ives was the only one that had access to a real recording studio, though, for his stuff. All his stuff was crisp. But I also love how all the elves are generic except for Hermie. Like, no personalities whatsoever except him.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they all, they all look like, they all look the same. Maybe they had different colored hair. Yeah, I think with
I think their hair was all covered up completely by the hats.
I thought there was some of the women elves have like different hair.
Yeah,
that's it. But I think with the Burl Ive thing, I think that he was the only one in the recording booth, and then how they got everybody else's lines is they left the tape running overnight in the recording booth, and they locked the door, and everybody had to yell their lines through the door and hope that it stuck.
Well, he got the booth. Everyone else got the one microphone in the open room. Like Colin suggested earlier, yeah. So they take off in what is supposed to be the storm of the century, but I gotta say, it's a pretty light snowfall for something that's supposed to be the storm of the century. I mean, the Misfit toys are all standing around being like, oh, I guess they couldn't find us in this weather. And it's like, there's not a snowflake to be seen. Like, seriously, are you in the eye of the storm right now? Like,
I think that they aren't they didn't have as much money as they thought they would in the asbestos fund to give all the nice snow in the movie. So,
yeah. So Santa picks up the Misfit toys, and we get the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer song while all the toys are being handed out. I mean, you know, bonus, all the kids get a free umbrella, too.
True.
Yeah. So, you know, here you go, kids. Merry Christmas. Here's all your crappy toys.
Here's your fucking Charlie in a box, pal.
Yeah, your cowboy here's riding an ostrich.
That doesn't slink.
Yeah, that's right. And the end. So now, Colin, Joel, on IMDb, it scored 8.1 out of 10. No Metascore listed. On Rotten Tomatoes, it's 95% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 78%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like elf dentist pulling out all the teeth of an abominable snowman. Hit us with some reviews. I'm doing terrible ones today.
Okay. Sonic Buster Music says, doesn't give a star rating, but says, the story of a young reindeer who was bullied by literally everyone, but in the end they had to swallow their pride because he had a skill that everyone lacked, and they learned to love him and his quirk because of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to show everyone that he was worth appreciating and loving. This is a beautiful classic film, and whenever I watch this, it starts to feel like Christmas. It's important to love and appreciate everyone, even if they are different, like Rudolph. Maybe you could even do one better and not bully and belittle people for liking a movie about how bullying people is wrong. I think that would be a win-win situation. And that's kind of because on Google here, there's a lot of hate going on.
Hashtag irony.
So let's listen to this one. This is going to be, I'm only going to do, this will be the last one for Rudolph because it's quite long, but it's from Christopher Berry. It's from a year ago. He says 2 out of 5 stars. This movie is little more than capitalist propaganda by robber baron executives at CBS seeking to entrench Industrial Revolution era exploitation of the working class through children's programming. The movie begins with the birth of Rudolph, the tattoo reindeer owned by a Santa, for the purpose of driving his sleigh and breeding. His parents live in a barren cave, which suggests that Santa does not pay them for servitude beyond, perhaps, necessary sustenance. Within minutes of Rudolph's birth, Santa is already barging into the private family affair to inspect his new stock. At the same time, his parents are already conditioning Rudolph to strive to deliver maximum performance for his owner, Santa. That Rudolph's parents do not question this arrangement demonstrates lack of education and critical thinking by Santa's servant class, and hints that Santa may be taking extreme measures to suppress dissent. As the main story arc progresses, Rudolph is single-mindedly obsessed with pleasing his owner and has no sense of identity outside of his owner's schemes. Furthermore, no mention is made of what happens to Santa's reindeer who are not worthy of driving his sleigh. One can only imagine that, as most livestock owners do for non-performing livestock, that such reindeer are slaughtered for food and profit. This is consistent with Santa appearing slimmer during the spring months when baby reindeer are born and fattened up. And being fattened up by Mrs. Claus during the winter feasting time, and livestock are traditionally slaughtered because of the scarcity of crops and animal feed. The story's conclusion is Rudolph's quote-unquote triumph when Santa asks him to guide his sleigh through a deadly blizzard without salary or benefits such as life insurance. Thus, there is no redemption for Rudolph. It is a classic downfall story arc where exploitative capitalism triumphs and the working class proletariat mindlessly pander for the crumbs of their robber baron's approval. The story serves only to remind its working-class audience that there is no salvation outside of their capitalist system of exploitation, and that their only option is to seek the approval of their employer, landlord, and other robber-baron oppressors, whom they have been conditioned to obey. In addition to Rudolph, we are introduced to the side plot involving Rudolph's misfit elf friend who endures sweatshop-like conditions in Santa's production facility. He is forced into exile for questioning Santa's plan for him to spend his life miserably manufacturing toys for Santa. One writer ostensibly agreed with the CBS propaganda and inserted fantastic elements such as trees at the North Pole despite there obviously being no land there. Unfortunately, that sabotage is far too subtle to redeem the story, which is otherwise saturated in robber baron capitalism. I give it 2 stars instead of 1 because the claymation production style holds up well, the voice acting is good, and the plot is fast moving and intriguing despite the glaring moral and social fissures that the movie propagates. There you go.
Wow. Wow, you just read someone's doctorate.
They got when I think of Rudolph, I also wish that it touched more into Marxist-Leninist theory.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, you know, what can you say after that one?
Exactly.
It's 8.1 and 78 from audiences, 95 from the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. But, I mean, it's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And I think, for me, like Joel said, it's so steeped in nostalgia that it doesn't matter what I think about it. Whether I really think that it's terrifying or that it makes no sense or anything, doesn't matter. It's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I'm going to watch it every year anyway. So I still love it. But yeah, I definitely found a few things about it this time that it's like, wait a minute, what are they really saying? Seeing it with 2022 eyes is definitely unique. That's for sure. Yeah. Joel, what did you think of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
Again, I love that last review. I think that that touches on a lot of points about the plight of the working class. I think that elf practice, as they say, is inherently referential to the way that the school system teaches kids that all they're worth is their work, but their work is not worth a living wage.
Yeah.
And, equitable status. I wish that the elves had a union, but maybe that's just me. But yeah, like you said, I love this movie. It's my all-time favorite Christmas movie. It just brings back so many fond and positive memories. Every time I watch it, it's like a warm cup of hot chocolate. Like, it's just, there's something about it that just feels like the season. This movie and the John Denver and the Muppets Christmas album are, right? Like, that's Christmas to me. It's the best Christmas album ever.
Yeah, it's the best ever. Yeah.
Bump
for calling birds. Okay, yeah, right on. Yeah, I can't hear that song without adding a bump 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 because of that.
Of course.
Album.
In your best Miss Piggy voice, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Colin, as the one who doesn't have the childhood nostalgia, what do you think of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
What is there to say but Vive la Resistance or something? Yeah. Solidarity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those movies I'm glad to have watched it, but I mean, it's not Charlie Brown for me. It's not The Grinch. Those are my Christmas favorites. Like I think I said in the last one. So I mean, I don't know. It's only an hour, but I was like, this is too long. Like, cut this toy Misfit Toys business. Like, I don't need this. Yeah.
Get to it.
Get to the blizzard. Save the day. Let's go.
Yeah. Back to Santa being a union busting racist. Come on.
Yeah, don't take tangents from the song that you already have in place. I don't remember the chorus about
follow the formula.
Yeah, I ran away with the dentist. I don't remember that chorus in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Okay, yeah. Right on. No, I think that's fair. Watching it for the first time as an adult has to be tough. Because it really is just growing up on this is the only way you can appreciate this movie. I think if you showed it to your daughter, she would hate you for life. You know,
it's funny. I was watching this. I purposely, my daughter loves snowmen, so I was watching this. And she was all down with Sam the Snowman. But about half an hour in, she just looked at me and she was like, "Watch Paw Patrol," and then she points at the TV and says, "No, like this one." And I was like, "Okay, fair enough."
Thanks, Sophie.
Yeah, thank you for your input.
Right on. Well, there we go. That is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It's time to move on to our next part of this episode. We've got Carly waiting in our queue to come in and talk to us. So, Joel, thank you so much for joining us. We couldn't have done this part of the episode without you. That's for sure.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Thank you for letting me talk about my deep-rooted, Rudolph-related early teen trauma. You know, it's like, who needs therapy when you have a couple of pals on a Zoom call? It's way cheaper this way, let me tell you.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you both for having me on. Let me discuss this film.
Right on.
No problem, man.
So, Colin, before we get Carly in here, why don't you introduce our next movie for today?
All right. The date is December 14th, 1970, and we're watching Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
All right, welcome to part three of I Used to Like This One. But now we welcome into our Zoom world our friend who we last saw back when we talked about Friday the 13th, Miss Carly Pettit. Carly, welcome back.
Thank you. It's been so long. Missed you all so dearly.
Yeah.
It's been such a long time.
Yeah, well, we're glad to bring some festive spirit because even though you chose a Halloween movie, we still also wanted to have you on for Christmas anyway. You know, so Merry Christmas, Carly. Have you done a Christmas movie with us?
No, I think the closest I got was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Okay, so one question I like to ask people is, what is usually their go-to holiday movie?
Well, I have to say, before we were in Elf, it was Elf.
Okay.
Now it is not, and it sucks because my husband does not like this movie, but my go-to Christmas movie is probably Home Alone.
Home Alone?
Mm-hmm.
How can somebody not like Home Alone? It's the best movie ever made.
I know. It gave me some serious second thoughts. I was like, are we serious right now?
Die Hard for kids.
Die Hard for kids.
So, okay, before we get into this movie, Colin, give us one more 60-second synopsis.
This one's going to be long because I literally wrote it as I was synopsizing, if that's a word, as I was watching.
Synopsizing?
So, yeah.
Yeah?
It's going to be a little bit more packed maybe than normal.
Okay.
When a baby with a tag stating Claus arrives at the doorstep of Burgermeister Meisterburger, he turns it away. On the way to the orphanage, the baby is lost in a snowstorm but is saved by the woodland animals who deliver him to the Kringles, a family of elves. The Kringles... My autocorrect autocorrected Kringles to Kindle. So it says the Kindle's named, but what it's supposed to say is, the Kringles name the baby Chris and teach him about the family business of toy making. When he becomes a man, Chris decides to take on a mission of delivering the Kringle toys to the children of nearby Sombertown. Upon his arrival in Sombertown, Chris learns that the toys are illegal as decreed by the Burgermeister. He gives them to the children anyway, and when BM, that's Burgermeister Meisterburger, because I just got tired of... spelling it. when the BM finds out, he tries to have Chris arrested. Chris escapes Meisterburger only to run into the Winter Warlock, whose cold exterior melts away when Chris gives him a toy train. The two become friends, and the Warlock uses his magic to help Chris reunite with his lover, Miss Jessica, who tells Chris that BM has destroyed all the toys in Sombertown. But not only that, he's also decreed that the houses must lock their doors and they are to be searched before bedtime. To counter, Chris opts to enter the houses through chimneys and hide the toys in the children's stockings. Burgermeister sets a final trap for Chris and captures him, the Kringles, and Winter. Jessica goes to save them, gets some magic corn from Winter, and uses it to make flying reindeer, which they all use to escape. Now a fugitive, Chris grows a beard to use as its disguise and reclaims his Christian name of Claus while he continues to deliver toys and spread joy throughout the world. There you go.
Right on. So, Carly, just like our other two guests this episode, Will and Joel, it's time to ask you, what is your history with this Rankin and Bass classic, Santa Claus is Coming to Town?
I was more of a Rudolph gal. That's like the movie that we kind of grew up watching.
Yeah.
I think I'd only seen this maybe once or twice when I was very, very young. Okay. 'Cause when I even rewatched it, it was like some bits were familiar to me and obviously are like... our felts and our puppeting and stuff like that. It's very obviously familiar and very noticeable. Like it's a very distinct type of movie, the three of them. So it's like, I knew that it was like an unknown nostalgia. Like I didn't quite remember the story, but I instantly felt kind of comforted and like at home and that I was like 3 years old again and watching these in bed with my mom before, you know, on Christmas holiday and stuff like that. So it was not a super well-known story to me, because this is one that I didn't watch all the time, but still just the nostalgia of growing up with these types of movies definitely helped me out a little bit.
Yeah, and just like Rudolph, I wonder which came first, the song or the movie? I'm assuming the song, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I'm assuming the song.
Yeah.
especially because this one came out in 1970.
Yeah. And that song just sounds way older to me.
That's true. Yeah. So we open this movie with one part that I definitely didn't remember was just more real world action. One thing I noticed watching this movie was that there's a lot of moments where they managed to pad the movie without having to do some meticulous stop motion animation. With some of the cartoon animation or the flipping through books, or like by making the first minute of your movie a newsreel with black and white real people decorating trees and telling kids not to cry because Santa's coming, stuff like that. But we meet SD, played by Fred Astaire, who is the postman. Now, as someone that works for the post office, he probably shouldn't be opening those letters, right?
Isn't that a federal crime?
Yeah, he should know that's a federal offense, yeah. But yet he opens all these kids' letters. He's like, you know, look at this. This is what this kid is asking. It's like, dude, that's not your mail.
Some personal questions in there.
Yeah. Yeah, so Fred Astaire gets to sing the first couple lines of Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and we get our credits. And I think the fact that these letters are talking to him is a very high concept idea that I would not have realized when I watched this as a kid. The idea that it's like, oh, all these kids' voices, because he's talking to the mail. But yeah, these kids' voices are all coming from the mail. These letters are sentient.
Well, doesn't that come into play in like another, that is Elf. Like, isn't it like when they write, it's like the letters don't really matter. It's like as the kids write the letter, it's like
prayer like it gets
beamed to Santa.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Santa is an ethereal being. Santa knows everything. Santa can read your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's a witch.
Yeah.
Santa is, in fact, a witch.
Apparently, he's part Winter Warlock. I mean, that's got to be what it is. I mean, that's such an intimidating sounding name. And Santa, because he has the Winter Warlock's magic, that means he's part Winter Warlock. Look out, kids.
Yeah, yeah, watch yourself.
Don't cry or the Winter Warlock will get you.
Yeah. Santa's a goddamn warlock and he knows how to get in your house.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
I thought it was kind of funny. I don't know if either of you have watched Adventure Time, but like, it seems to me that they ripped off the Ice King from the way that the Winter Warlock looks in the drawing on the of the card, but not what he actually looks like in reality.
Yeah. Well, I'd say there's a few cartoons. Like, wasn't one of the bad guys in Strawberry Shortcake kind of looked like that or something? An ice guy? Or no. Maybe not.
I don't know. I don't know.
But I do know, like, Corpse Bride, one of the parents, I think one of Victor's parents looks very much like Burgermeister as well. Oh. Like, very much like Burgermeister.
And that one's stop motion, so very much. Like,
yeah. I was watching that. I was like, oh my God. Am I watching Corpse Bride?
Yeah. So we get to meet the mayor, Burgermeister Meisterburger, and a baby was left on his doorstep, and I like all the vaguely, I guess it's not Nazi German-ness, because this is more World War One, because we've got the spiked helmets. This is more Austria in, you know, the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, there's something very Reichy about it, though, you know?
Yeah, it gives me Danish vibes, like, yeah, I guess maybe Austrian, though, too, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, and just to reinforce the evilness, the mayor banishes the child.
How dare this baby show up on my step? I banish it. Get it out.
Yeah.
Like, just give it away. Like, isn't that offensive? How dare this baby show up?
How dare it?
There's also something to the town being called Somber Town.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just...
And it's just, all gray.
Yeah, everything's all gray and drab.
Yeah, you're not wearing a very good disguise in Somber Town when you come in later on as Kris Kringle, you know, with this bright red jacket. And... Yeah. So the baby, though, ends up being rescued by animals, because that's what we have in all these movies, is an animal somehow shows up. Can't have a Rankin and Bass property without magical animals saving the day. Yeah, and takes them to the Kringle elves. what I really enjoyed about watching this movie is it's like, this is an origin story. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's like, you know, this is a straight up comic book origin story. He's Doctor Strange at the end of this movie. Mm-hmm. You know, he goes through his trials of toy making. I like how they just throw them out the door because they got nothing else to do with them. We're going to make them and throw them out. Like, they're not even putting them on shelves. Come on. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
can you guys name all the Kringle boys?
No.
Oh, my God.
I did not write it down. I did not no. write it down. Did you?
Well, I know the first one is Dingle.
Dingle? One of them is Wingle. Like,
yeah, I think there's a Dingle, Wingle, Tingle, and Pingle for sure.
The one thing I know is that most of them are probably single.
Yeah. Oh. Wow.
There's one woman. There's only one woman, Kringle. So there's only one paw elf, unless it's polyamorous.
Yeah, we don't know. It could be like a Smurf situation.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah.
I like how they all have these names that rhyme, and they go, let's name him Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We played that one out.
My favorite scene of probably this entire movie by far is, like, after he meets the Kringles and they go through, like, their whole story with making the toys and blah, blah, and as he's growing up. And then it's, like, the narrator is literally, like, when he became a man, and then it splices to him. He's like, I'm a man now, family.
I had that one written down too. That one was beautiful. And tomorrow he's going to leave for Sombertown because that's what men do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but we find out that, like any superhero, you know, learning his new trade, that, you know, there's a learning curve and Chris has to walk his toys around. He doesn't start off with all the gadgets. He has to start off by just strolling through town with his sack of toys. But I don't know whether it's the 2022 protective helicopter parent in me or what, but all I see is the problems in this movie with this strange man coming up to a group of kids in the town around the fountain and just giving out toys. The song that follows him giving out the toys, where it's like, if you sit on my lap and give me a kiss,
yeah,
you get a toy. You know, and it's just like, ugh.
Yeah, that type of shit lands you in jail these days.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
I just don't like yeah. the subtext that I know I'm only picking up because it is now 55 years later.
So I agree. I did the same thing. Yeah. Yeah, I was like, ooh. Mm. Yeah, would not love it if a strange man came up to, I don't even have children, but if I did, came up to my child, sit on my lap, give me a smooch right on my cheek. I'll yeah. give you a gift afterwards.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, nope. Mm-mm.
Now, I do also enjoy the slow descent of the Burgermeister Burger as, you know, first he slips on a toy and breaks his funny bone by falling down some stairs. Why does the doctor have a thermometer in his mouth? He has a broken leg.
He's got to make sure that he's healthy still. Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, like, if he's feverish, he might have gangrene infection. And he might have to lose the leg. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, so he vows to destroy all toys in a song and, you know, dancing on that cast like he didn't just break his funny bone.
Isn't your funny bone in your elbow?
No, they say it was funny bone. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's funny.
Because it's hilarious. Yeah. It's so funny that his funny bone is now in his foot or leg.
So, yeah, before watching this movie, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that Mrs. Claus is named Jessica. That seems like a very un-Mrs. Claus name. Don't you think it should have been, like, Martha?
Like Marion? Yeah. Yeah.
It's a superhero movie. It's got to be Martha.
Yeah, did not expect that one. Yeah. Jessica. Like, hi, my name is Mrs. Claus. Jessica Claus. That just doesn't seem right.
And why are they all shit?
Jess Kringle.
Jesse Kringle. Yeah, why are they all gingers, too? They really like the redheaded Santa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and redheaded Mrs. Claus. Redheaded Jessica Claus.
Is that is it something that, like, do gingers go, like, gray or white quicker? Like, is that a reason, or did they just do it to, like, stark contrast of, like, everybody having gray and, like, dark hair in Somber Town? Like, I wonder if there's...
My redheaded brother hasn't gone gray yet.
Okay, then maybe I'm just talking out my ass.
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like it's more... I feel like that's probably more just, like, an aesthetic choice for the show to just have it be more vibrant.
He's monochrome. He just read everything.
Yeah, I guess so.
We all know that there's no such thing as a ginger Santa. That Santa would be, well, he does have a red nose, so I don't know, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I think about all the painstaking work they had to do to create all the different Santa looks. Because we've got baby Santa, we've got kid Santa, we've got... I'm an Amish adult Santa. Now. Amish Santa at one point. We've got salt and pepper beard Santa with a little bit more chub on him. We've got, mm-hmm. they go through like 8-9 different looks of Santas in this movie.
Yeah, that's one thing that I have to give these like movies credit is that just the mass amount of detail that has to go into movies like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. Like, I don't think I would ever have the patience to work with like stop motion like that.
Yeah. So Chris ends up getting arrested because he's a nonconformist and a rebel, and because he's got toys. So he gives the mayor a yo-yo, and it distracts him for a moment until he remembers, oh yeah, I hate toys. And so he wants to arrest Chris, but boy, Chris is on the lam, and he's doing some major parkour around this town of Somberburg or Somberville or whatever.
Somber town.
Somber place. No, there was some crazy parkour going on there.
Mm-hmm.
But he ends up befriending the Winter Warlock because his icy heart melts, and we get the whole walk through the door song or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that Warlock, I really thought there was going to be more to him. I thought he was just going to, like, I thought he was going to be a little bit more mean, but he just melts like it was nothing.
Yeah, they just get him part of the squad as soon as they can in this movie. Yeah, like, that's the thing. Having just watched Rudolph as well, you see that there's these people okay, we're a team now. Mm-hmm. These complete strangers, no, we're now in it together, and we're the best of friends.
Yeah, don't forget his pet penguin.
Yeah.
Topper. What that guy's.
Topper.
That kind of simplicity of relationships really reminded me that, like, yes, these are absolutely 100% for children. They are not for, like, those movies. Like, Rudolph maybe a little bit less than the others, but those movies are mostly enjoyed by children. Like, adults that are watching them afterwards, again, like our Sit on Santa Lap song. How well would that fly today, later? Not as well as it did probably, or even just if you had like a small child sit down and listen to that song now, they probably wouldn't understand. So they'd be like, yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Love Santa.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess when I asked earlier about which came first, this or the song, I guess something like, A Christmas Story was set in the 50s and you sat on Santa's lap there. So yeah, okay. So that makes sense. I do like, though, how they give reasons. They add to the lore of Santa Claus with this movie.
Yeah.
By bringing in the fact that, okay, well, the town that he was trying to deliver to, the kids used to just leave the front door open for him so he could walk in and give them toys while they slept. Okay. But then, the mayor orders all the doors locked, so he has to find a different way in. Well, I'll just climb down these chimneys. That's so much easier. But at first, like, Santa's original plan was to do it every night.
Relax.
Yeah, at the end of it, they're like, okay, we're going to pick one night. But it's like, really? Like, his plan was originally to go out every night?
Yeah, that seems a little bit too ambitious to me.
Yeah.
And was he still only going to Sombertown, or was he going to more places?
No, he was still only going to Sombertown.
Those kids must have been so spoiled. Or was it just that their toys...
They kept getting taken away.
Yeah, but it's like, at some point, I guess the movie kind of presents it that it is also pretty close to the time that Santa decided to only go one tonight, but, Burgermeister, like, he falls out of favor eventually, so as presumably there was some point where, like, they stopped taking these toys away.
Yeah, I suppose so. We also find out that that's the reason for stockings, is because it was going to be an easier way to disguise the toys once he figured out he could come down the chimneys. Yeah, so, I mean, just more of this, like, adding to the lore. And the Winter Warlock has given him his power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Warlock creates the reindeer with the feeding magical feeding corn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe he has a little magic left. But, you know, then all the soldiers come and arrest everybody, and all of the accessories to Kris Kringle's crime of being a rebel. And so all the toys get burnt in a giant pyre in the middle of town square. And we get the weird, dreamy, animated song from Jessica about Kris being in the dungeon and the optimism and blah, blah, blah. But the way the animation is and the music is like a little bit disco-y,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't fit the rest of the time frame that the movie is set in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the one part that I like looked away for one sec, and I looked back and I'm like, hello, what's going on?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah.
Weirdly, I think now that we've watched all three, but it works in Frosty, but I think in both Rudolph and Santa Claus is Coming to Town, I could have done without the songs.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't find that they add a lot. And they more often kind of just, like, take away with their weirdness and their, like, tinny sound and that kind of stuff where you're just like, ugh. I wonder if kids back in the 70s watching this for the first time were probably like, oh, like, this is cool. Like, you know, it's the Disney formula. We all love music in our cartoons and stuff, but watching these back now, it's super, super dated, and really, I just find the kind of musical interludes to be a little bit, I don't know, detracting.
Well, and they tried something different with each one of them, too, it seemed like, because there's the Jessica one where it's all animated, and then there's the one later on where they're decorating the Christmas tree, the wedding, or whatever, mm-hmm. and they've got, like, the blurry edges on the screen, like mm-hmm. it's a soap opera from the
vignette, yeah.
So, yeah, like, it's, you're right, they take away from the movie, except for, like, the flagship song. Like, Frosty mm-hmm. the Snowman, you sing Frosty the Snowman because that's the movie. Yeah, okay, sing Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Yeah.
So, off the red
yeah. Road.
Yeah, the other one's totally unnecessary. But they're all in the dungeon. Boy, this is like some sort of violation of, you know, some war crime or something. These conditions, they have bars that are open to a winter environment. But when terrible. Jessica shows up, she like knocks on what sounds like glass. But then the warlock comes up to the bars and he's reaching through the bars. It's like, where's the glass?
Yeah.
It's just bars open.
What are you knocking on?
Yeah. What are you knocking on? Yeah, that's not how bars sound if you knock on a bar.
Well, like, if it's open, could you just not go, like, why do you need to knock? It's open.
Yeah.
Just say something.
Yeah. But so, they break him out of prison, and Kris Kringle ends up becoming a fugitive from the law, with wanted posters up and everything. So he grows his Amish beard to disguise his appearance, and I like that he doesn't actually look any different from his wanted poster. but like his first comment on the disguise is, "It's perfect. Like they'll never recognize me."
Yeah, not with your bright red suit and your bright red hair and your bright red Amish beard.
Yeah, your neck beard, which basically just looks like a scarf anyway. Mm-hmm. So your features are still visible. You got to hide that shit behind a mustache. So, and he decides he needs to change his name, and well, conveniently he had a name tag when he was dropped off at Burgermeister Meisterburgers, which said Claus. Well, I guess at the elves too. Okay, so are the elves the first people that work for him? Like, does he end up bringing the Kringle elves to the North Pole at the end when he buys his North Pole castle?
I think that's what I assumed, but maybe I assumed wrong.
Yeah.
But I thought that kind of, again, to me, just with what we know about Santa Claus, that was kind of just like, oh, yeah, I guess that's where the elves are coming from then.
Yeah. It's kind of dark also that, you know, they're like, well, at some point the Burgermeisters just died off and and they start to think that the whole thing was silly anyway. It's like, oh, okay, well, there we go. This kid's cartoon just murdered an entire Bloodline. That's genocide. Santa Claus is coming to town. And then, just like every other Rankin and Bass movie, this movie ends with a montage of everything that we just saw in the movie. Summing up what happened. Just in case, yeah. Just in case you tuned in, if you were looking at your watch back in 1970 going, oh shit, it started 55 minutes ago.
It's kind of ingenious if you think about it. Like, say some kid was out and he had to do his chores and he like was like, oh, I just need to get back for the last 10 minutes and then, you know, I'll still be able to talk about it with all my chums at school the next day.
Yeah. I'll be able to fake my way through the water cooler conversations. Yeah. This one, incidentally, premiered on ABC. I didn't mention that at the top, which is interesting because, as we've already discussed, Frosty was on CBS and Rudolph was on NBC.
So they got the trifecta.
Rankin and Bass got the trifecta. Yeah. But there we go. I think that is Santa Claus is Coming to Town. So on IMDb, it's scored 7.7 out of 10. It has no Metascore. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 93% on the tomato meter.
Whoa.
An audience rating of 81%. Nostalgia kicking in high for this movie. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a Burgermeister Meisterburger falling down some stairs. Hit us with some reviews.
Well, I mean, kind of the crazy thing about that audience review on Rotten Tomatoes is that there's only 5 total.
No, the 93 was on the tomato meter. So that's critics.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, the audience is 81.
Yeah, I'm just saying with the 81, like,
there's only
5.
Okay.
And they started in January 5th. The oldest one is from January 5th, 2021.
Oh.
So I'm just going to do the first and the last.
Okay.
The first one is from Jonathan W., who gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, classic Christmas special that does a fun job giving an origin to Santa Claus, covering everything from delivering toys to flying reindeer. The vocal cast is superb across the board, with Mickey Rooney making an ideal Santa Claus, while Fred Astaire is excellent as the narrator. The animation remains some of Rankin and Bass's best, giving a right mix of majesty yet creepiness. A must-watch for every Christmas season.
Okay.
And then Andrew S. says, 4.5 out of 5 stars. A nice origin story. That is perfect for a nice Christmas movie marathon. There you go.
Oh, that's it. That's it. Okay. I thought you were just taking a breath. Okay.
No.
Right on. So, yeah, high ratings on this one. For me, actually, no, let's go to Carly first, because now that Colin and I have been around for all 3 of these, we have some things to hash out now at the end. But Carly, as our guest for this portion of the episode, what did you think on this viewing of Santa Claus is Coming to Town?
I know I mentioned it to the beginning that the story itself wasn't the most familiar to me, although I have seen this before a long time ago. It was more the nostalgia of, like, I watch Frosty and Rudolph. So the style was very nostalgic. It was like a nice warm little hug that I got to experience again. However, the story, again, I also appreciate there being, like, yes, this now this cool Santa lore that explains everything from reindeers to stockings. I thought the stockings was super cute. Like, I thought that the details were there. But yeah, I agree with Colin too. Like, if this would have been shortened by 15, 20 minutes and taken the songs out, except for the beginning when we ever actually sing Santa Claus is Coming to Town, I think it would have been so much easier to sit through. I wouldn't have had as many questions or concerns as I do. So I think if I were to rate it, I would give it like a 3 out of 5.
Have you recently watched any of the other Rankin and Basses, the Frosty or Rudolph?
I haven't watched them as of recently, no.
No, okay. I was just curious where this fell amongst them now that you've refreshed yourself on this one. Like, comparable or like, nah, you'd rather watch the other ones?
I think I would probably rather watch the others, but I think they're still comparable. I think it is very much like a I also think the same for Rudolph and Frosty the Snowman. Like, would I technically sit down and choose to watch those now as an adult without any children? Yeah. Probably not, but I can still really appreciate the story for what it is and for what it can, you know, that can be a really great way to, you know, spread some Christmas with some younger ones. So, like, I don't think that I would personally go and rewatch all of these again. I'm happy that I have watched all of them and that I know all of them, and it's been a part of my childhood. But I think that Santa Claus is Coming to Town still ranks up where it measures up to Frosty and Rudolph for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Right on. Yeah. This is the one that before doing this episode, I know I've seen this the least out of the three.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the trip down memory lane because, much like you, it was one of those where, okay, there's some stuff that I vaguely remember from seeing this as a child. This is one that I think I might have had more flashes back than you might have, because there was like, okay, right, this song. Oh, okay, right, this song. But I wasn't able to predict what was coming. But it was, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, yeah, I know that. Mm-hmm. Fuck, how did I not remember that? Now, so for Colin, out of the three, what would you think, you know, where, how would you rank them amongst each other?
I actually like this one the best. I would say I probably like Frosty the second best and Rudolph last.
Yeah.
That would be how I rank it. Yeah. I like this one the best because, despite the music, I think the story is more fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like the origin story aspect, and I like the weird, like, basically making Santa Claus Robin Hood type thing that's going on. I thought that was interesting. Whereas, like, with Rudolph, I find the story is, like, a little all over the place and weird, and they're, like, trying to fit, like, shoehorn a lot in to, like, make it longer than it needed to be.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really like that about Rudolph. And then I would just put, like, Frosty is just as long as it needs to be. It's like 25 minutes or something.
Yeah, it's the shortest, for sure.
I don't really like, I like the stop motion animation, so I kind of wish Frosty was that too, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. That's okay. Kind of where I would sit with it.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, like, it's, I wanted to go to you first because you don't have the childhood nostalgia. And there was a part of me that I wanted to see where you landed, because I actually have the exact same ranking on my own end. On this viewing, I got the most out of Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I loved this one. I thought it was really great. And Rudolph, by comparison, I know it's blasphemous to say because I do have the childhood nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
I should love that one the most, but no, I definitely enjoyed Santa Claus is Coming to Town the most. And Frosty above that. Frosty above Rudolph. Like, so yeah, I have the same ranking. So out of the three, yeah, my pick for this year is Santa Claus is Coming to Town as well.
Yeah, I would say out of the three, Santa Claus is Coming to Town is the only one that I could see myself willingly being like, oh yeah, that was cool, let's watch it.
Yeah,
the other two I'm kind of like, it was cool to watch them, glad I finally have like some reference of that, but like
mm-hmm.
I don't know that I would ever on my own impetus watch them again.
Yeah. Well, there we go, right on. That is our big Christmas classics Rankin and Bass episode, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, a big huge thank you to our guest Carly Pettit. Carly, last time you were here in October, you had something that was coming up. Well, you've been rehearsing madly at it for a couple of months
now.
Sure,
you're tired.
I'm so tired and I'm so stressed. But rehearsals are going so well, and I'm so excited.
Plug your shit. Yeah.
So if you are in Edmonton and area, the Leduc Drama Society is doing Freaky Friday the Musical from February 2nd to 4th. You can see me there. I am playing Ellie, who is the teenager who gets switched with her mom. So Jodie Foster's character or Lindsay Lohan's character, whichever Freaky Friday you grew up with. It would be cool to see there.
Yeah. Maybe that's what we need to do, Colin, is we need to do a remake comparison episode. That would be a fun episode to do. take like a Freaky Friday, the
Freaky
original,
the Friday,
Freaky the Friday, the original, and Freaky the Friday, the remake, and compare them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe we should do that, and then we can have Carly come back on and give us the inside scoop into the psychology of this character.
That's right. That's right.
And sing us a song, of course.
Well, there you go. Finally reached the end of this episode. If you like that show, well, the best Christmas present you could give us would be a word of mouth review to a friend, or a review online with a podcasting app, giving us 5 stars and a little review, help drive us up the charts and help us get noticed. Or if you want to go above and beyond to help out the show, well, you go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become a patron of the show, become part of our family, and you become an executive producer, just like our executive producer, Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all our podcast episodes and social media pages. And if you're so inclined, please drop us a line at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is hosted by, created by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Or if you want to hear more content from me and my job as a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast, season 2 now out. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. That Christmas episode may end up being far more epic than I expected it to be. I don't know. Actually, no, probably not. There's a lot of stuff to cut out of there. There's a lot of times where it's like, I don't know what I'm doing because this isn't a normal episode. So, right on.